Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Good Friday morning to you. Chris Goforth in alongside Jason Longshore. We are in for Andy and Randy. Today's the guys get the they get the holiday off, get to celebrate 4th of July, start that long weekend a little bit early today. Jason, always good to see you. The last time you and I were together was Memorial Day.
That's right.
And you and I talked before the show that day and in the week leading up to you and I being together that Monday, and we said, you know, let's talk about some other stuff. There's so much heavy stuff going on in the world, so much about, you know, the coronavirus and all of that. Let's find some other things. And we did. We found a lot of other things that were, you know, we talked a lot about stuff going on the field. I am afraid, Jason, we are to the point now, at least for the next couple of weeks, everything sports related is all going to be about test and positive test over the pandemic, with all these sports beginning to crank back up. And I think that's going to be one of the themes as you and I go through the next 4 hours together. Is baseball's going to have an announcement today? We're seeing some numbers come out already from the MLS that I want to get your thoughts on. But with the NBA getting ready to crank things up as well, NFL training camps will come later this month. For the next couple of weeks, I think what you and I are going to talk about today is kind of going to be the new norm if you're a sports fan in terms of the news that's going to be coming out.
See, and if you've been in the soccer world, this is second nature right now, because we've been through this already in Germany, in England, in Italy. I mean, the German Bundesliga finished its season. They came back and they were able to complete the season. England has declared a champion in Liverpool. They've won it on the field. There's still some games to be played. Italy and Spain and most of the other major leagues in Europe have been through this. And we've talked about testing, and we've talked about safety protocols, and we've talked about travel protocols and all these things that now baseball has to consider, that now the NBA has found its way back to the court. The NHL is still figuring its plan out. And now in the NFL, this is the conversation. What is training camp going to look like? What is preseason going to look like, if there is a preseason? What do rosters look like? And most importantly, what does the testing procedure look like? And, you know, we talked about it a little bit on Memorial Day, what college football was going to do as we were starting to get some really early announcements. There really hasn't been any progress, and that's been maybe the most shocking thing of all.
I think, Jason, here's what concerns me about college football. It doesn't feel like anybody has a – I don't want to say that nobody has a plan, but nobody has a plan. And what I mean by that is, I think every school, you're starting to see and hear about the plan for getting athletes back on campus, beginning to do the strength and conditioning programs that happen during the summer. But nobody is saying, yes, we're going to play football, and here's how we're going to play football. This is what it is going to look like. This is what the game day protocol is going to be. This is what the protocol during the week leading up to the game is going to be. I don't think anybody has a clue yet as to what that is going to look like or what it's going to be. And I don't know if that is schools are now suddenly afraid to step forward and say anything, like they don't want to be the first. I know that the Ivy League has said they are going to come out next week as a league, and they will announce what their plans are for fall sports. So I would assume that once the Ivy League makes their, they may be the first. Look, the Ivy League may come out and say, we're going to do A, B, and C, and here's how we're going to do it. And then at that point in time, you'll start to see maybe some of the other leagues begin to fall in line. But the Power Five conferences, they have autonomy. So they can, they don't all have to move together. In other words, they don't all have to be in lockstep. What the SEC does may be different from the ACC. I know I've got a friend who is an ACC official for football, and I don't know what the cause of the call was, but they had a Zoom call last night at 7 o'clock with all of the ACC officials to talk about this coming football season. Now, what was said, I don't know. He told me he felt like that they were going to be told to clear their schedules and be ready to start the season in February. That was his opinion of what he thought the telephone call was going to be. I don't know, and I haven't heard from him yet today in terms of what that of what the call was. So I don't know. Tim Brando for a long time, and folks know Tim Brando from his days of being the studio host of the SEC on CBS. He did Braves games for a while. He's done college basketball, still does a lot of college basketball and college football stuff. Brando has been the guy now for, I don't know, probably the last 10, 15 years that has been saying, we need a commissioner, or to use his words, I think Brando calls it a czar of college football. I think if there has ever been a legit argument to say we need someone in this role, this pandemic has brought that to life, that there needs to be someone in that role, without question now.
It's been needed for a while, and this absolutely shows it, because that's the difference. If you look at what organizations that are active right now in terms of playing games that count in this country have, they all have a commissioner. The NWSL was the first team sport to get back on the field, the National Women's Soccer League. They have a commissioner who made some very bold actions to get them back on the field. NASCAR, PGA Tour. You know, if you look at the leagues in Europe, they all have somebody who is in charge and making these decisions. The NCAA doesn't. And you get all of these different things that are being said and different approaches. You have some schools that tested their athletes before coming back to campus. You have some that tested when they arrived back on campus. You have some that didn't test at all. You have some that didn't test at all. And then they had a rash of positive tests once people started to come back. And then they freaked out. You've had some that have tested just for antibodies, which is crazy. It doesn't make any sense to mandate that and not do the COVID-19 test when people come back. You've got the athletic director at Penn State, Sandy Barber, who says that playing the college season in the spring is a last resort. Well, now, as you mentioned, you've got some conferences that are looking at it. Maybe it's not a last resort. Maybe that's what's going to happen. And you've got others who are just full steam ahead, no questions asked. They're planning on playing a full schedule. The most difficult thing about this, as I've been learning more about it and what your kind of basic minimums are to be able to safely do team sports, testing is the key. And testing isn't cheap. And testing is going to, along with all the other protocols in place, it's going to raise the amount of money you spend to do this. And we all know that there's a strong possibility that the stands won't be full. The stands might be empty completely. They might be somewhere in between. That's going to cut down on revenue. And when you start to do the math, there's going to be some programs, Power Five or not, definitely outside of the Power Five, that it just becomes a cost issue. Can you effectively do what's needed to make this safe for it to happen? Or are you going to be basically, unable to afford to have a college football season safely? That's where we're at, and that's what these commissioners of the conferences, because there's not an NCAA college football czar, without that, the conferences and these athletic directors and these college presidents are going to have to make some difficult decisions, and I don't think we're going to have uniformity across the spectrum.
to piggyback off of what you're saying, consider this too. You know, we talk about the economic impact that it could have on universities if we don't play college football. What's the economic impact on Athens, Georgia, if Georgia doesn't play six home games this year? What's the economic impact in Gainesville, Florida, or Knoxville, Tennessee, or Oxford and Starkville, Mississippi? I mean, you know, Clemson, South Carolina, you name the college town. What's the impact if on the business owners there, especially the restaurants and the, for that matter, even the gas stations of people coming into town, because there's so many people that drive in that, you know, will get hotel rooms, that eat dinner, that buy gas, all of those things. So it doesn't only affect you at the university level or the athletic department level when it comes to budgets. It's also something that, that can hurt small business owners who, in a lot of these college towns where, you know, the you're seeing 80,000 people come to town or more, depending on where you're talking about. When you're talking about that many numbers coming into town, it's an economic boon for those businesses that they may be without now as well. So there's a little bit of a trickle down here. Jason, I want to get your thoughts on something. Mike Conti tweeted this last night. Mike, of course, your partner on the Atlanta United broadcast. Mike said that the MLS is reporting they have COVID tested 855 people at the hotel in Florida over the last 2 days. Six positives, four of them are players. Now, we don't know who the players are or what team they're on, but 855 people tested the last 2 days. Six are positive, four of them are players. I'm assuming the other two are probably team officials.
Yeah, in total, and we do have some other cross-reporting here. We know FC Dallas is the team that has been hit the hardest with this. In total, since arriving, they've had nine players test positive and one coach. Columbus Crew reportedly has the other positive on the player side. So that's in total since arriving. And MLS had a very forward-thinking, I think, protocol procedure for getting players and staff into the bubble. And it was a lot of testing before they go, testing once they arrive. And Dallas has been the one that there's a lot of questions on what happened with the testing prior to them arriving, because they did not have positive tests with the people who have had now positive tests since arriving. And when you start to look at the timelines, this is where it gets really tricky as we learn more and more about testing and procedures and this virus every day. You know, the period of time that you can have it but test negative is generally 5 to 7 days. And MLS originally, if you go back to the very beginning of the conversations about the bubble and the Orlando plan of competition, they wanted teams to come in 2 weeks plus before playing games. And in the negotiation about the CBA and back and forth and trying to make this more comfortable for the players, because you didn't want to keep them away from home as long as possible, now you're cutting that time down for players to come in. But what that does is what we're seeing. You're seeing positive tests. And it brings everything into question. You know, Dallas, they're supposed to play in less than a week. They're supposed to play next Thursday. Are they going to be able to do that? Can they move it back? Can they readjust the schedule a little bit? Other teams coming in, there's a couple other teams that have had some positive tests in their market. And are they going to be able to get those confirmed as positives, leave players behind, come into the bubble, and be okay? There's a lot of questions as we're figuring this out. MLS has committed a lot of resources to this. And as we know, you know, the virus is going to determine what you can do. It's not going to be down to the protocols and the wishes. We have to see what's going to happen with this as MLS tries to figure it out on the fly.
It's going to be interesting. We'll talk more about this, including how it may affect Atlanta United, coming up a little bit later on in the show. Invite you to hang on. We've got Dr. Jerry Punch. You know him from the Pits The NASCAR races. You've also seen him on the sidelines of college football. Dr. Jerry Punch will be with us coming up later this morning at 10:40. So just over a little less than 30 minutes, 25 minutes or so from right now, we'll visit with Dr. Jerry Punch. We'll also get into what's trending, and we'll do that again because there's a lot of stuff as all these leagues begin to crank back up to get play underway. We're going to start to see more and more announcements coming. Baseball is expected to announce a number today of the COVID tests that were taken and the number of positive tests. That number's coming out today. We hope that it happens while we're on air. We'll be able to bring that to you. We'll come back. We'll hop into what's trending next. Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Have to understand and accept right now that's going to happen, and you have to get down to the percentages, and you have to get down to, okay, isolate, identify who it is within the team and handle it within the team so it doesn't spread. That's the job now.
How much of a concern is it? We talked about Mike Conti had tweeted this out last night that MLS is reporting that 855 people at a hotel in Florida, I'm assuming this is one of the hotels. I think there's, correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, there's two hotels that teams will be staying in.
Correct.
In Orlando. This is at one of the two. They tested 855 people over the last 2 days, six positives, four of those were players. And Jason, you gave the numbers. Is it nine players now from Dallas FC that have tested positive? Is that right?
That's right. Nine positive from FC Dallas. And it's been a little bit in a wave. There were two who tested positive upon arrival. And the arrival process, I mean, you're minimizing any contact with anybody outside of your team because you're also testing twice in the 72-hour period before getting on the charter flight. You get off the charter flight, you get on a bus, you're not interacting with the bus driver. You get to the hotel, you walk in, and you test immediately. And two players tested positive at that point, and there's been a couple more each round of testing. And that's worrisome. You know, Columbus has had a player test positive. Now, after testing negative upon arrival, that's worrisome. You have to identify and you have to figure out where there could be any breakdowns in protocol.
Now, with MLS play starting less than a week away, I think we're 5 days away from United back on the pitch for the first time. How concerned should FC Dallas be with nine confirmed cases?
It's very difficult for them to get ready for a match on Thursday, next Thursday, because they're not training right now. And that's the process that we've seen play out here in Atlanta, where Atlanta United had a couple of positive tests that were then confirmed. And the team didn't train until the rest of the group all tested negative. And that's going to be the process for Dallas. So they're testing every other day right now. And I'm sure Dallas is probably in enhanced testing, and they might be testing every day right now. They're not going to get back onto the training pitch until everyone outside of the ones who have already tested positive and you've isolated, until everyone else tests negative. That's going to make it difficult for them to play next Thursday. There is some wiggle room in the schedule, and you can rearrange things to a point, but there are some limitations with that as well.
The NFL says that players may be fined for coronavirus violations. This is according to ESPN. Players have been told they could be fined for conduct detrimental if they are found to have engaged in reckless behavior away from team facilities. The NFL is also working on a protective face shield that could be worn while playing, practicing, and working out. Players are pushing back. They're concerned about visibility and also the ability to breathe with these shield that the NFL is proposing. They have another call that is set for today. This is going to be open to all players, not just the union reps. The initial call that ESPN's reporting on involves only the union reps from each team. Instead, they're going to open it up to all players today. The NFL is saying that players would be tested every other day. The player reps are saying they want to be tested every day, that's kind of what they want. So sounds like the NFL is trying to get some sort of protocol in place in order to be able to get training camps open at the end of the month.
Yeah, the shield idea, anything attached to the helmet that could limit visibility, that could limit the ability to breathe, that's going to have to be worked out with the scientists and the equipment folks. So that's a very valid complaint on the player side. They have to feel comfortable with that. The issue of potentially fining players who are found to break the protocols, that's the only way you can guarantee safety. You know, I mean, even if players, even if all of us, you know, follow all the recommended activities in our day-to-day life, there's still risk. And if you're doing things as an athlete here that you're being told, you know, don't go to a restaurant, don't take public transportation, don't do these things that involve more risk, the reason why you have to be strict about that is whenever anybody does that and increases their personal risk, they then in turn increase the risk of their teammates. And you just can't have that right now in the world we're in.
Yeah. And again, if you want to change someone's behavior, probably the best way to do it is to hit them in the pocketbook, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look, it's the same thing that's going on with FedEx requesting that the Washington Redskins change their name. FedEx paid $205 million to the Redskins for naming rights to what is now FedEx Stadium through the year 2025. FedEx, Nike, and Pepsi have all received letters signed by 87 what ESPN is calling investment firms and shareholders that are worth a combined $620 billion, that's billion with a B, asking those companies to sever ties with the Redskins unless they change their name. Interesting that last night, Jason, Nike removed all Redskins gear from its online store. So if you go to the Nike online store and you search Redskins, it turns up nothing.
You go back to Monday, Ron Rivera, the head coach, said that it was a conversation for another time. That other time came up really fast.
And yes, it did.
This conversation has to be had, and the name should have changed a long time ago. There's just no question about it anymore. And the idea that it would hurt the Redskins from a business perspective, people are attached to the name, there's really nothing to back that up. And look, part of this is because the team's been bad on the field as well, but no players in the top 50 last year in NFL jersey sales. They don't have a waiting list for season tickets anymore. Now is the perfect time to change this and rebrand. And you can hold on to the elements of the tradition that people might like the color scheme. You can do things like that to keep some links to the history, but the name has to change. There's no way around it anymore.
Jason, what's the biggest reason? I think it's the biggest reason. I think it's the number one reason why teams change uniforms and even logos from time to time is because when that happens, people go out and spend a whole bunch of money buying up new gear that has the new logo. And I think the Redskins would end up seeing a lot of the same thing. If you change it, I think they would end up seeing an increase in merchandise sales that kind of, as you pointed out, correlating that over to season ticket sales, they could use that right now. They could use that injection. Daniel Snyder hadn't done a whole lot right since he's bought this team.
No, he has not. And this is a chance to do something right. This is a chance for him to be on the right side of this. And it would help the brand in such a huge way for that team because right now, do you think any casual football fans are going out to buy Washington stuff? No. Nobody is. Only the hardcore fans. If you come up with a good brand, a good logo, Washington went through this on the NBA side when the Bullets became the Wizards.
Right.
You know, they became more relevant and sold more stuff. That's what can happen with the NFL team as well.
Well, I think if you look, and I think I feel like I'm right in saying this. It feels correct. If you go look for the teams that have changed, you mentioned the Washington Wizards, formerly the Bullets. If you go look at those teams that have changed nicknames, I don't think that you'll find that years later that anybody regrets. I don't think anybody in Washington with the NBA franchise regrets making that move. There was a great article in the Tennessean newspaper yesterday about Belmont College, which is a small Baptist school in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And Belmont, most people will know from the NCAA tournament. Rick Byrd's been the coach there forever, and they've had a long, long history of success in basketball. But Belmont back when they were in NAIA program or a Division II, Division III, whatever it was, they were Division II. They were known as the Rebels. And in 1999, before they made that step from Division II up to Division I, they changed to the Belmont Bruins because there was some connection with a bear that had been kept on campus there at Belmont. And, you know, they talked to the people there at Belmont, including the guy who was the president, and he talked about how, yeah, I got a little bit of pushback at the time, but now I don't even remember. And I have a lot of friends that went to school at Belmont. There's a whole bunch of country music stars that was kind of the place for them to go was to Belmont. So they've got a lot of alumni. I never knew they were the Rebels.
It fades really fast. And you look at the Bullets. I mean, the Wizards still do the throwbacks with the old great Bullets uniforms. You can still have an attachment. Change the name. It's time to move on.
NBA talking with teams, including the Hawks, about a second bubble scenario in Chicago. 8 teams that are not going to Orlando. They would go to Chicago and play. Still has to be approved by the Players Association. Target date set for September. I know some people are going to look at this, Jason, and they're going to say, why? Why do this? I'm a Hawks fan. I think it's a good thing. I'd like to see those young guys for the Hawks get some more. I don't care about wins and losses. I want to see those young guys on the floor together and get more time together. That's what I want to see as a Hawks fan.
You're doing this for development. It's yes. All to develop the young players. And with the, you know, you're not going to have any kind of a summer league for those young guys as well. That's what this becomes, a modified summer league and a great opportunity for young players to develop.
Hey, NASCAR heads to Indianapolis this weekend. It's the Brickyard 400 that's coming up on Sunday. We'll visit with Dr. Jerry Punch. You know him from the pit crews of NASCAR, reporting from pit row. You know him from being on the sidelines in college football. We'll hear a couple of comments from him later on in the show concerning college football. We'll talk NASCAR with Dr. Jerry Punch. That's next. He's Jason Longshore. I'm Chris Goforth. We're in for Andy and Randy today on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore in for Andy and Randy today on the Midday Show. Glad to have you with us and glad to be heading out on the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in. You know him from, you've seen him in the pits and NASCAR races. You see him on the sidelines during college football. You hear him on his Rolling with the Punches podcast. Glad to welcome in Dr. Jerry Punch with us. Jerry, it's been an interesting couple of weeks in NASCAR. Give me your thoughts on what has gone on these last couple of weeks in the sport.
Well, first of all, Chris, it's great to be with you guys. Love the show. Love being on with you. Wow. I mean, who would have thought that we would have gone through what we've seen the last 4 or 5 months, you know, with the pandemic and the quarantine and you name it. And then NASCAR finding a way, because they're uniquely positioned, to be able to get back on the racetrack, because it's an outdoor sport and the drivers can walk straight from their motor home to the car and never go to the garage area, et cetera. And then NASCAR and the racetracks, give them credit. I mean, thinking outside the box, having to be creative, having to run doubleheaders at Pocono, you know, to be able to get a race in on Saturday and Sunday, to be able to run Wednesday night races at Martinsville and Bristol and then be able to go, you know, to places. And NASCAR found a way. It's incredible what they've done in spite of the weather issues that they've had with some lightning delays at Homestead and some rain delays at Pocono, that they're going to be moving in on the end of July with 20 races probably complete, which is incredible that they've been able to continue the season and have great racing. No qualifying, no practice. You show up at the racetrack with one car and limited number of crew members, and you line up and race. And I think the racing has been as good as we've seen the last few years.
This compact NASCAR schedule, how do you think it's going?
I think it, you know, it's unfortunate that the hand was forced to have to do it this way, but they may have found something that really may help resurge NASCAR in terms of fan interest, viewer interest, sponsor interest, not qualifying, not practicing, not wasting all these hours, extra people at the racetrack, all the extra money, tires, et cetera. I think the fact that you line up, and it's like turning back the clock to the old days where you showed up at a racetrack or a short track and said, okay, you unload, you line it up, and you go race, and the fastest car may be starting 18th or 20th. And you have to adjust, you have to adapt. You really know who the best drivers are. You put the race back in the hands of the drivers, as opposed to some team that has 50 engineers working for them. Those engineers can't help you much when you don't do practice and qualifying. So I think it's gone really, really well. And on top of that, they've determined that you can put racing on in prime time on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night, make it a 3-hour show, cut the race down to, 250, 300 laps, and people will watch because the ratings have proven that out.
Dr. Jerry Punch with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we talk a little bit of NASCAR. We'll get to the Brickyard race coming up this weekend. But first, quickly, Doc, going back to last week, Pocono to me it's always an interesting race because, look, you've seen them all. That track is unlike anything else in NASCAR, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, they call it the tricky triangle for a reason. It only has three turns. If someone tells you they're having trouble in turn four at Pocono, they're at the wrong track. but it was designed at the three legendary tracks. Turn one, 14 degrees of banking, designed after Trenton Speedway, no longer there. High speed hairpin. Turn two is a tunnel turn, 9 degrees of banking. Looks like Indianapolis Motor Speedway, almost flat. And turn three is flat at 6 degrees. It's designed after the Milwaukee Mile. So those three distinct turns, speeds of 190 plus miles an hour on that straightaway, very, very difficult. Richard Petty said 30 years ago, you show me a driver that can win at Pocono, and I'll show you one heck of a race car driver. That's a separator. That just tells us who the drivers are and who the pretenders are. So obviously Kevin Harvick and Denny Hamlin have showed up that they've got a lot of talent.
Yeah, you mentioned those two guys. They have won, they've each won three races since NASCAR kind of got things restarted. Do you see those two guys kind of separating themselves from the rest of the pack now?
It's hard to say. I mean, they've had, since we've come back to racing, they've done well, but I mean, Kyle Busch, go figure. Kyle Busch, if you were to poll the drivers and they could vote without anyone letting them know who's voting, I would say Kyle Busch may be voted the most talented driver in the garage area. He has that kind of car control ability. He's yet to be able to get the win he wants. I think Joey Logano is good. Brad Keselowski is good. Chase Elliott, this kid from Georgia, when he finally starts winning, he's going to be hard to stop, just like his dad, Bill. So much talent, so much ability, and just needs to be able to cut it loose. So I'm not sure you could say it's Hamlin and Harvick. They may be the hot ticket right now, but it's like game three of college football. A lot can change between week three in September and what's happening at the beginning of December.
Dr. Jerry Punch with us as we talk some NASCAR here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The Brickyard 400 coming up this Sunday. What do you expect to see?
I think that it's, first of all, it's sad the fans can't be there, but Marion County is one of the few counties in Indiana that's still a phase behind everywhere else, so they couldn't allow the fans in. But it's the first ever tripleheader. Obviously, there will be two races on the road course on Saturday. The Xfinity race will be run at 3:30, but that's after the IndyCar people. The IndyCar races run. So IndyCar and NASCAR sharing the same racetrack on Saturday, and on Sunday the Brickyard 400. I think coming off Pocono, the fact that that track is very similar to Pocono in terms of flat and speed, et cetera, et cetera, I think it's going to be maybe as good a racing as we've seen at the Brickyard in the last 4 or 5 years because of the rules package, the extra downforce, the large spoiler. I think you're going to see a lot of cars running close together and more passing maybe than we've seen at the Brickyard in probably the last 5 years.
We talked a few minutes ago kind of about this compact schedule and how things have gone for NASCAR. Do you think they've learned anything from a scheduling standpoint? Do you think we may see changes in the NASCAR schedule going forward after this year?
I think they wanted to change some things a couple of years ago and were afraid to make ripples in the tank. And now that they've seen what they can do, I think this is absolutely going to be the springboard for change in scheduling. Being able to run races on Wednesday nights in prime time, being able to run doubleheaders. Some tracks, if we're going to lose a race, maybe can run a doubleheader and not lose a weekend. And you can shorten the schedule, shorten the races up, all of which is going to help the sport. I think they've learned a ton. And now And they wanted to go to some other areas, maybe some other road courses, and maybe look at some tracks they haven't been to for a while. They can do that now that they can run some midweek events.
I like the short tracks, Doc. I like Richmond. I like Bristol. I like Martinsville. Can NASCAR get to the point to where we see more races at tracks like that? And there's really nothing unique about Kansas or Chicago, is there? I mean, it's not like, it doesn't have the same kind of feel as Richmond or Bristol or Martinsville. Can we get more of those kind of races?
I certainly hope so. I'm like you. I'm right with you. That's the character and the culture that was NASCAR back at its roots. I think going to Bristol, Tennessee, or Richmond, or Martinsville, full contact stock car racing, pushing and shoving, you know, tempers flaring. You know, you put that on a weeknight, on a Wednesday night, on network television, and people aren't going to be watching the sitcoms. They're going to be watching what's happening, you know, reality television NASCAR style at Richmond or Martinsville or whatever. I think that's exactly where NASCAR needs to go. It'll help with ratings. It'll help with viewership. It'll help with sponsorship. And I think it helps the sport. So the fact that you may be able to go to Martinsville a couple times during the year at midweek, or go to a Bristol on a Wednesday night and have the or maybe have a doubleheader at Bristol on a Saturday and a Sunday night. How would that be? And you, so the guys you make mad on Saturday, they can come back and get you on Sunday.
Dr. Jerry Punch, he's been around the NASCAR garages for a long time, and Doc, I know you had a great relationship with Dale Earnhardt Sr. It was announced, well, I guess it was last month now, it was announced that Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. You know that family well. Have you got a good Earnhardt family story you can share with us?
Boy, I tell you, you're right. Dale was a close friend, and we had just had a great relationship, trust, cared about each other. He helped me out time and again. I try to do the same for him. Thrilled that Dale Jr. is going into the Hall of Fame. All I can say is that when we lost Dale, it hurt me deeply. It still does today. I think about him a lot. It was about a year later that the Olympics were coming to Atlanta, and Dale Earnhardt Sr. was supposed to run the Olympic torch because it was sponsored by Chevrolet and Coca-Cola, and they called Teresa Earnhardt and said, we need someone to fill his spot, someone that would be meaningful to the family, because it was going to be Teresa was going to run the torch and light Dale Jr.'s torch, and then he was going to run it and light his dad, Dale Sr.'s torch, who was going to walk up and light the cauldron. And Teresa told him to call me, and I was so overwhelmingly flattered and touched that they want me to do that. So I did that. I basically went. The torch was coming. The flame had been flown in from Greece, and it was actually coming into Charlotte that next night. So it was. They put us in a bus. Myself, Teresa Earnhardt, Dale Earnhardt Jr., and Taylor Nicole, their little girl, and we went out about a mile or so out of town and waited for the torch to come up the road, and then the way it worked out was I got off and ran first, and I lit Dale Jr.'s torch, and then he ran over and lit Teresa's torch, and she walked up there in town and lit the little cauldron in the center of town. So being able to do that to honor Dale's memory, the family asking me to do that to honor his memory, I have that torch here in my office on the wall, and every time I look at it, I think about him and how special that was and our relationship was and what an honor that was for me.
Wow. Dr. Jerry Punch, appreciate the time, man, as always. Look forward to seeing you back in the pits and on the sidelines again soon, and I hope we can get a chance to catch up again one day.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Always love the show. And everyone listening, stay well and stay safe.
Appreciate Dr. Jerry Punch giving us a little bit of time. By the way, we ended up talking, this our conversation, we had to have it yesterday. He couldn't be with us live today, so we recorded that yesterday, but we talked for about 25 minutes. If you'll go over to 929thegame.com coming up a little bit later on this morning, once Ken gets a chance to get it posted, you'll be able to hear the entire 25-minute interview with Dr. Jerry Punch in its entirety. He was very involved in the movie Days of Thunder. and which is celebrating its 30th year from its release this past week. So
oh, wow.
He reminisced a little bit about the movie Days of Thunder, and he told some great stories about meeting Tom Cruise and how it all kind of came about. And he was actually got a little bit of writing credit on that movie and was a technical consultant for the movie as well. So cool stuff. Great guy. A lot of fun to talk to. Check that interview out later today if you get time. Jason, you ready to hop back in and let's talk a little NFL?
Let's do it.
We'll get to our NFL No Huddle. That is coming up next. Training camps get underway end of the month. Jason and I will get you set for the NFL season next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.